This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I noticed you're getting ready to record here. You were getting everything set very quickly. In fact, I think you had the reflexes of a Norpin Falcon.
Chris, I'm glad you noticed that. I've really been working on my Norpin Falcon jiu-jitsu, and okay. It's really been helping me get things done in a more efficient way.
Well, that means that you would be very good with the Bat'leth. Worf would be very proud of your fast reflexes.
Well, I really took to heart what he taught me as a child, unlike Alexander, his not-to-be-mentioned son.
But today we are going to mention Alexander because we're going to be continuing our series on the season 6 opening arc, and today we're going to be talking about sons and daughters. Therefore, we will be talking about Alexander, we will be talking about Zial, or as her father calls her, Zial. And one person, Matthew, who we won't be talking about, although I was reminded of them at the end of the episode when Worf and Martok break out the candles, is Jeremy Astor. Now, have you looked at Alexander Roshinko's family history on Memory Alpha before?
I can't say that I have. Maybe, I think it's just a character that I tend to avoid at all costs.
Okay. So, well, according to Memory Alpha, where they list all of the family members of Alexander, Jeremy Astor is listed as an adoptive uncle to Alexander.
Oh, really? Adoptive
yes.
uncle? Wow.
Yes.
That sounds like an upgrade.
Right. Because he had the candle ceremony, and Alexander gets it again here. Although I don't think Jeremy had to cut his hand and set the blood on fire.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't think that non-Klingons have to do that, but I feel like, you know, in other ceremonies we see, like, humans have to cut their hands, like Sisko does, and,
Admiral
Bill
Ross.
Admiral Ross, yeah. I just call him Bill.
Okay. Well, he's Bill to you, yeah.
We're tight like that. But so, yeah, that's interesting. Maybe they don't make human children do it.
Okay, maybe. You have to be at least 16, 18 before you can cut your hand.
Yeah, some kind of like parental waiver thing. And of course, who is Jeremy going to get to sign that?
Well, but Matthew, I'm pretty sure that on Kronos, parental waivers for school projects and trips have to be signed with the drop of blood.
Actually, that's true. So, but again, I mean, Jeremy didn't have any of that. So,
right. You
know, they let it slide that time.
All right. So we're going to talk about this episode today. And when you think about this episode, Matthew, does anything happen that stands out for you as being important here in the arc beyond the relationships? I see Worf and Alexander, of course, father and son, Dukat and Zial, father and daughter, Kira and Zial. Kira is kind of like an adoptive mother to Zial, I feel. And then an interesting one here, it feels like Martok takes on the role of father to Worf in this episode to help him learn how to deal with Alexander.
Well, the thing that stood out for me, honestly, the most is, as I was just rewatching this, Chris, before we got on to record, was actually Jake channeling Riker as he stands over the chair, you know, and that great scene there in Quarks. And I was really proud of him. And I think Riker would have been really proud. Yeah. I don't know if he's been taking those correspondence courses, you know, the full Riker. But
I can see a correspondence course where it's like a Skype class, but Jake goes in his quarters and Riker comes on the view screen and Riker is showing him how to step over chairs. And Riker does this for people all around Starfleet.
Oh my gosh. That's how Riker can afford to, you know, gamble at Quarks and these places that he goes, because he's actually charging Latinum for these classes. And so, you know, you have to do the thumbprint to get into his class. And so, that was just, I love this idea.
But you know what this means? This also means that Thomas Riker is going around scamming people, pretending to be William Riker, teaching them how to sit in chairs.
And it's never as good. I don't know if you've seen Thomas's class, but it really lacks the panache that real Riker has.
You can tell when someone's been studying with Tom and not Will.
Yeah, they almost always stumble over the chair when they're trying to do that. And so, yeah, it's just, but I got to say, Jake really pulls it off here. So that was really nice.
He does. Well, Strzok Lofton at this point is very tall, like Jonathan Frakes. And so apparently, you know, not being so tall myself, I guess I don't know the ins and outs of sitting in chairs, but apparently this is a thing.
Yeah. I don't know, Chris. Maybe someday we'll get a chance to actually hang out in person and we can try it and see how it goes.
We'll try, because you're quite tall.
Well, I mean, I don't know if 5'9 is considered tall. Maybe in...
Oh, I thought you were taller than 5'9.
Yeah, I wish I was taller than 5'9.
All right. Maybe you were wearing your heels that day when I saw you.
Don't tell people that, Chris.
You know, you were preparing for our profit and lace discussion that we have.
Oh, God. Okay. So let's talk about Worf and Alexander.
So let's talk about that. So this is the meatiest of the less than successful attempts to bring Alexander back on DS9. I kind of feel like they were trying to bring him back. And if I recall correctly from things that Larry has told me in the past, the directors weren't that thrilled. The producers weren't that thrilled with Mark Warden, who's playing Alexander here, which I kind of agree with because I don't like his portrayal of Alexander either. And I try to look through it to the writing and see how he is portraying what was written and the attitude he's supposed to have towards Worf. And maybe it would work if we didn't already know Alexander, but knowing Alexander as we knew him on The Next Generation, when he shows up here, and this is the first time that we actually see him, he's mentioned in Way of the Warrior, but this is the first time he's on the show, and it just doesn't work. There's this huge disconnect, and as a parent of a teenage boy right now, who I see brooding and being angst-filled, this doesn't feel like a realistic jump for me from the Alexander that we last saw in Firstborn and earlier on TNG to right now. So how did you feel about Alexander showing up in this episode and how he was acting towards his father at this point?
You know, honestly, I thought personally that it was pretty realistic, because for me, watching this episode again today, I was struck by what a terrible father Worf really is.
Well, we won't deny that. I think everyone can agree on that.
But I think he's a terrible father in that he didn't get the son that he wanted, and so he shipped him off to his grandparents. And, you know, that can be felt by a child. You know, when you feel unwanted, you know you're unwanted. And, you know, unfortunately, the best thing here is that Worf is not a psychopath like Dukat. So, you know, Zial can't tell that she's being lied to and that he has some sort of real caring about her. He can fudge over the idea, oh, well, of course I left you. I was just angry. I'm sorry. I overreacted. You know, Worf, on the other hand, he's completely owning the emotions that he has. And I think that watching Alexander be angry at his father for what's happened is well done. Now, I am with you. I think it may be just the actor that I'm not necessarily completely responding to in the storyline. You know, there's a disconnect in the story that I'm feeling, and I think it's because I'm not responding to that actor.
Yeah.
And maybe if it had been somebody different, I think the writing here is great. I think it may just be that portrayal that doesn't quite grab me in the way that it should, because I really think that we should completely be on Alexander's side in this storyline, because Worf is the one learning the lesson here, not his son.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, pretty clear at the end of the episode as well. Well,
that's where I feel that Martok takes on a father-son role to Worf in this episode. One thing, so for me, as a father, sometimes I struggle with how to handle situations and how to get through to my son, because my father was absent when I was growing up. And, you know, my father disappeared when I was quite young, and I didn't see him again for a good decade or so. And by then I was already an adult. And now my father is gone. And I did not have that influence of having my father around. I think it's very, very important for children to have both their mother and their father around when they're growing up, because you get something from each of them, things that you need to draw upon when you're older yourself and when you're a parent yourself. And so with Worf, we talk about Worf being a bad father, and he is a bad father. But I also think that Worf, even though he had his adoptive parents, the Rishenkos, he's a Klingon growing up on Earth with adoptive parents who don't understand the culture that he comes from. And so they cannot impart to him the knowledge that he needs in order to raise his son. And Worf doesn't want to raise a human son. Like you said earlier, he didn't get the son that he wanted. He wants to raise a Klingon son. He's completely ill-equipped to do this. And so while he is a bad father, he's also, I think, greatly disadvantaged to begin with in trying to be that father.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is that at least here, you know, Worf is not comfortable in his own skin yet. He hasn't become the Worf that accepts, in some ways, that's the way that Spock does, that where he accepts, I'm human and I am Vulcan. I am Spock. That makes me unique. Worf hasn't really accepted that either, the uniqueness of who he is, that he's a Klingon who has been raised by humans, and kind of accepting that he's not completely Klingon, he's not completely human, he's something that's an amalgamation of both. And like Spock, he's spent so much of his life kind of denying his human upbringing, and that's kind of, I think, hurt him as a person, because he's been denying a part of himself. And so that's impacting, I think, the way that he's reacting as well to Alexander, who is denying the part of Worf that he's always wanted to be and accepting the part that he hasn't wanted to be. And so talk about a really messed up family dynamic here. Yeah. You know, they really need some good counseling, but, you know, Troy's too busy with eating chocolate to actually give good counseling.
So maybe if Worf and Troy had stayed together, then Troy could have helped out here as Alexander's stepmother.
You know, that is actually a great point. And I'm surprised that I feel like that could have been a great storyline. And of course it wasn't, because TNG wasn't really interested in diving so deep into the characters like this.
And that also came about at the end of season seven. Yeah, so they couldn't have done anything with
it. Exactly. And then of course, by the time we get to Deep Space Nine and Worf is there, Troy is doing films, and when they're interacting on screen in the TNG films, they could care less what's happening really on Deep Space Nine with Worf, because
right.
we don't even want to mention that his wife died. So right, let's not get started about that.
Well, also, Worf just shows up in those films.
Yeah.
And makes Riker uncomfortable. Like, why does your ex keep showing up all the time?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, wouldn't have been, wouldn't have been a great conversation, at least to mention, at least say somewhere in Insurrection, oh, your wife died, that's so sad. And him and Troy have to have a pretty intimate conversation, but they don't, they're not interested
that would have made
that
sense.
Kind of
But speaking of this, while we're on this topic of Worf just showing up places, this is apparently something that just runs in the Klingon blood, because this episode opens with us finding out that Martok just happened to be in the neighborhood and saved everybody. Like, thanks for picking us up on that planet and bringing us back to the station.
Well, there's a planet in that system that has the best chicken fingers you've ever had. Martok loves the sauce.
Okay.
So that's really what it was. It's kind of like a Raisin Cane's for the, you know, that part of the Alpha Quadrant.
Is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I hear that sauce really enhances the flavor.
Did you not see that Klingon food that they were eating? That's what that Klingon was pouring on Alexander's food, was that sauce.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, let's draw in parallel here, too, while we're talking about this, that Worf's storyline throughout TNG, and especially through DS9 when they flesh it out more, is trying to find what he feels is missing, because his father, he lost his father young, and so it's different than Alexander, where Alexander's father is alive but is ignoring him, has kind of abandoned him. But Worf may also feel abandoned by his father, even though his father was killed. Worf wants to, he's always longing to become that Klingon and become that warrior and someone who his father would probably be proud of. And Alexander's kind of doing the same thing here. You know, he's joined the Klingon Defense Force. He's showing up here on this ship to, now, it's not clear to me that Alexander knew that Worf was going to be on this ship. Maybe he did, and he requested the assignment. Maybe it's just coincidence, since Worf is actually not in the KDF, but is a Starfleet officer. But nevertheless, I can see a parallel with what Worf has spent his life doing and then what Alexander is trying to do here, where he's trying to get back in touch and follow that path that he thinks would make his father proud of him.
Yeah, you know, Worf, he does have a sad childhood. He loses both of his parents to the Romulan sneak attack on Khitomer, and no wonder he hates Romulans. There's that visceral hatred for them. But I do love this parallel that, in a lot of ways, you know, Worf joins the House of Martok, and Martok becomes the Klingon father that he mm-hmm. never got to have because of the Romulan destruction of Khitomer. And I love that, because in the end, I think that Martok becomes that prototypical Klingon. You know, he is the warrior Klingon, but he's also not the stately Klingon. He's not the one who's the backstabbing, politically minded, bureaucratic Gowron type character, yeah. or
so
the
he's not a Romulan
type character. No, exactly.
Right. The Klingons don't like the Romulans for that reason, and yet people like Gowron, that's what they are like, right?
Right. And so I think what's really great about Martok is that he becomes the kind of spiritual father to Worf in a lot of ways. And you know what was great, and I noticed about the idea of Alexander being on the show here, is that Alexander is one of the few examples of somebody who is a Klingon, but not necessarily the best warrior. Mm-hmm. And yes, he's raised by humans, so it's a little bit different. But he does give us insight that there are Klingons out there who are like this. And that's a nice thing to see.
Yeah. And not only that, but Alexander's probably the norm amongst Klingons, right?
Yeah.
You know, we see, it's just like on Earth, there are humans who are incredible fighters, incredible with martial arts, but most of us aren't. And with the Klingons, we see the warriors because we're interacting with them in space. If we actually were on Kronos, we would find that outside of the warrior caste, which is a minority of people, I'm sure, most people are probably more like Alexander.
Right. It'd be like watching The Karate Kid and expecting that everybody from Japan or Okinawa is just like Mr. Miyagi.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what we kind of get with the Klingons. It's a little bit silly that we just think that because all we see is warriors, that's what we get.
Yeah.
And I like that the character that Alexander is, it is a nice representation of what other Klingons look like.
But with Martok, we do see someone who is a great warrior, but as you say, shows us that there's more depth to a Klingon than just being a warrior.
Yeah, he is the embodiment of what it means to be an honorable Klingon.
Right.
You know, and I think that's nice to actually see, because Worf has always wanted, I think, a mentor for that and a father figure for that. And we've actually never really seen that with Klingons. I think the only Klingon that we've seen chronologically that would kind of live up to that, to me, would be Gorkon, the Chancellor, yeah, in Star Trek VI.
But we don't see enough of him to get a feel
exactly,
for it.
Exactly. Yeah. But you get the feeling that he is a very honorable Klingon, probably a warrior. He's somebody who has a ginormous cane, you know. So it looks like he's been...
And he's modeled after Gorbachev. Yeah. And
exactly.
Lincoln. And I think with Gorbachev, because I am of the age that I grew up through all that time, I think Gorkon is a great reflection of Gorbachev personally.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you compare Gorbachev to what we have now. So, but we won't go into that in this show. But anyway, with Martok, here's another question for you. I've said before on here and on the Ready Room that when I first heard that Worf was going to join the DS9 cast, I was really against it. I thought it was a gimmick and a terrible idea. And of course, now I feel like DS9 is what that character needed in order to become a great character. And he added so much to the show, and he added so much to the other characters on the show. Plus, he grew into a very well-rounded person who you can follow that path, and you can identify with his struggles and how he came through them. Do you think that if Martok had not been added to the show, that would have happened? Or do you think that Worf would have kind of just wandered around this series as well without getting such a rich character development?
I think he would have always turned out to be a little bit more dimensional. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, you know, I think the relationship with Jadzia would have happened, and that would have really helped, because that is one of the things that brings out Worf's character and kind of, you know, she challenges him on what it means to be this kind of Klingon persona and all that. But it is Martok that really helps refine that in him. And I think we would have lost a huge aspect of Worf getting to that point where you kind of see him being more okay with who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because he has an excellent teacher to kind of help refine that and be more comfortable in his own skin. And that's what Worf has always had trouble with, is really being okay with being Worf.
Yeah, I think Worf needs that male figure in his life to help him grow as a man. And what's interesting about Jadzia is that he kind of has that, right?
In some ways, yeah.
He has Curzon to help him along, which is a little bit different than, say, if it had not been Jadzia and had just been Troy, or if it had been Ezri only, which, of course, probably wouldn't have happened without things playing out with Jadzia.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, Jadzia has that wisdom where she can see it from both perspectives in a way that someone who hasn't been both genders can't.
And what's really great about this storyline, I think, is that it is, you know, we're taking place here in the late 90s, and the idea of passing on manhood to your son, you know, and that manhood is something that has to be learned from another man and passed on to a boy from another man. And so even if it's not from their father, it's from a strong male role model to kind of help show them.
It doesn't have to be your biological father,
right,
which is
exactly
part of what this episode is about with Martok and Worf.
And so I love that it's playing all of those sides, And, you know, Worf is somebody who couldn't have that opportunity because his father was killed. Mm-hmm. And but it is another male Klingon to come alongside and take care of him and kind of nurture him in that way. It's up to Worf to do that for his son, Alexander. And I love that because, you know, in a world that we live in where so many fathers do kind of neglect their children, this is a whole episode about the importance of fathers for children.
Yeah.
And I like that. You know, it's just as applicable now, the themes of this episode, as it was then, maybe even more so.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And here, when Martok sees Worf struggling with Alexander, he does step in and he gives him that advice on how to handle him. And within the context of this story, and what's great about science fiction is how you can expand upon something and you can talk about it in ways that are difficult if you're just doing a drama set on Earth, all with humans, which is that he can guide Worf both in being a father and dealing with his son, but he can also guide Worf in how to deal with your son as a Klingon, because your son is striving to get in touch with his heritage as a Klingon and become a warrior. And this is something that you, Worf, yourself don't exactly understand. Like, you think you do, but we've said before too, right, that Worf is kind of like a textbook Klingon. You know, he studied from afar the history of his culture and the techniques of being a warrior, but that's not the same as growing up in that culture where it's instinctual for you. You know, he's the academic side of being Klingon, so it's hard for him to truly convey that to Alexander and know how to deal with him, and that's where Martok steps in and does that. And Martok also does the interesting thing in this episode where he goes and talks to Alexander himself, because when Worf and Alexander are doing the Bat'leth training, it reminded me, again, as a parent, like I watch my wife and my son try to interact. And you know, it's not going to work. It's like the same situation. It could be the son and another adult, and then the communication is going to work and they're going to learn that. But when it's the son and the parent, there's this built-in conflict, because as the parent, you think they should get this. Why don't you get this? Because they're of you, right? And yeah, it's easier when you deal with someone else's child, because then you can communicate with them more just person to person, and you remove that layer of the familial layer there. And you see that with Martok here, and the way he talks to Alexander is something that Alexander really needed to hear, but Worf could not talk to him that way as his father, because Martok can come in and just say, I don't need you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's interesting is watching that Martok is in some ways too, he's like the grandfather.
Yeah.
And so definitely, there's the lineage and the importance of the generations as well kind of being played out here. And I like that too, because it's another great message for in the United States, where we tend to not pay attention to our senior citizens.
Yeah, and that's where we're corner. On the flip side in Japan, where families are tightly knit. And your elders are actually more honored and respected still today.
Nobody puts Martok in the corner.
That's right. But it's true. And when I say, like, he can tell Alexander, I don't need you, again, that's to wake Alexander up, right? It's not meant to say, like, you are literally a useless person. You're not saying that. It's sometimes you have to make them think, you know, wake up and realize that certain things have to change about what I'm doing, because I'm in a developmental stage, right, as a child. And it's something Worf couldn't say, and Martok could, to wake him up. And I love that you said a grandfather, because that ties in as well to Martok as a father figure to Worf, which makes him a grandfather figure to Alexander. And often grandchildren listen to their grandparents more so than they do their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, we should move on to Dukat and Zial. Is there anything else about the Worf-Alexander-Martok-Worf dynamic that you want to touch on?
No, I think we got that one. And what's interesting is watching the fact that, you know, Zial has some of the same issues with Dukat that she's kind of having to deal with as Alexander did with Worf, and that kind of abandonment feeling. And she is able to accept the excuse that Dukat gives her and be able to forgive her father. You know, mainly because, as she says, you're the only one, he's the only one I have around. You know, I don't have anybody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Alexander doesn't necessarily feel that because he has his grandparents he can go to. And I'm sure probably has a few other people. It seems like Zial is so unique in the fact that she is half Bajoran, half Cardassian. She feels like everybody's watching her with that kind of snake eye. Like,
I think she has a much tougher situation than Alexander had growing up on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Because at this point in time, I think humans can handle a Klingon, a teenage Klingon in their midst, much more so than the Bajorans can handle someone who looks Cardassian in their midst.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think at this point, the relationship between Bajor and Cardassia is still so strained, and especially because of the situation that Dukat has put the entire Alpha Quadrant in with the Dominion, and the fact that, you know, the Bajorans are only not on the side of the Federation because the emissary has warned them not to be as a salvation, basically. It is a tough time. It's hard out there to be Zial in the world that she lives in. And it's sad to say that people wouldn't just accept her for her, especially since she is Dukat's daughter, but she's not overtly Cardassian. You know, who she is very unique. You know, she doesn't really have any ties to Cardassia other than her father. Other than that,
well,
she is a lot like more like Worf in that sense.
Yeah,
you know,
but her appearance, she looks very Cardassian.
Hey, she looks beautiful.
I'm not saying anything that she doesn't, but I'm saying from the Bajoran perspective. I mean, you think she's in university on Bajor.
Yeah.
You've got, I'm going to assume you enter university around the same time on Bajor. I mean, the days are a little bit longer, so I don't know how that plays into things, but and how you age, but you've got people in their early 20s, Bajorans in their early 20s, their parents, their grandparents lived under the occupation.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
And they're just going to see her face and that gray skin and those ridges on her forehead, and that's it. You know, it's like here to this day for me, you know, Japan can be a very frustrating country sometimes because they're still very xenophobic. And there's still this assumption that if you don't look Japanese, you can never be Japanese. It doesn't matter. If you're not Japanese, you will never be Japanese in this country. And to this day, I can walk up to somebody and I'll talk to them, and of course in Japanese, and they'll just look at me and say, I'm sorry, I don't speak English. Because my face isn't Japanese, and so their ears just turned off because the assumption is, well, you're not Japanese, so there's no way you can speak Japanese, and I'm not going to be able to understand you, and you're different from me, and that makes me uncomfortable. And that happens today here. And so naturally on Bajor at this point, they're going to look at Zial, and she has really no chance with the majority of people, I think.
Yeah. And what's nice is that is a good reminder of how we deal with people that are different, even just visually, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of racism that happens between the different color skin that we have, and how sad that is. And, you know, I mean, we face that. We've been facing that recently here in America again with the terrible shooting that we've had, and the frustrations that so many of us in America feel because of that, and that this is still so prevalent, and it's hurtful and harmful. And Zial is facing that every day when she's there. And so it is no wonder that she wants to be able to trust her father. She wants to convince herself that he is sorry because she wants to feel safe somewhere. And, you know, we've talked at length about this on this show, so I don't think we need to go into all of that again. But, you know, it's understandable why, too, Zial feels so close to Kira, who has taken care of her, who has become that surrogate mother. And, you know, in a lot of ways, she's kind of having to do this dance between the parents, quote unquote, that, you know, basically are divorced.
It does feel like that in this episode, right?
Yeah.
It's very much like a child whose parents are divorced.
And being a child of divorce, I know exactly what that feels
like.
Yeah,
and I am too.
Both of my parents are in the room, yeah.
My parents were collectively divorced 5 times between the two of them with different people. So I know very well how it feels.
So it is really an interesting thing to watch, and it flows right into that relationship of Kira and Dukat that they have. And what I really like about that is the way that Dukat is subtly able to kind of almost suck Kira in.
He does.
The same way that he could almost kind of, I feel like with those Bajoran mistresses that he would have and be able to win them over.
Question on this. Okay, so he gives her the dress here. Do you feel that he's using Zial to try to finally get Kira? Or do you feel that there actually is some sort of connection there that he sees the positive influence that Kira has on his daughter and he wants to nurture that?
She calls him egotistical. I think it's an egotistical, opportunistic dictator.
That's right.
And I think she
I'm glad you got the tater part on the end of that.
Yeah, dictator.
Okay, dictator.
Exactly what he's trying to do. And I think Dukat tries to use every situation to his advantage, especially when it comes to his sick relationship with Kira.
Yeah.
And that he wants her, and he wants her to love him, you know, the way he wants her to love him. It's a really sick, kind of twisted 50 Shades of Star Trek thing going on here. And it is one of the creepiest things in the fact that through this relationship that he has with her daughter, he's able to use Zial to have Kira almost think of him as a good person.
Yeah.
And it's her love for Zial, I think, that kind of is fudging everything over.
Oh, definitely.
Almost to the point where she can convince herself that he's okay. And then, you know, she looks at herself in the mirror with that dress and the disgust on her face is just, it's palpable. You could feel it through the screen. And so
I tell you, watching this episode again, the whole time I was like, Nana Visitor is so good as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time.
Yes, yes.
I mean, she is so outstanding in this episode.
Well, in the scene when they're on the couch, you know, and they both they're both feeling the joy of this daughter, quote unquote, that they have, and the pride that they have in her, and even there, you know, you can tell the uncomfort that Kira is having. Like she almost wants to have that kind of tick where she wants, you know, like her neck is kind of her skin is crawling almost. And yet at the same
time,
about
the same kind of tick that Lore has. And that's how you know he's not Data.
Exactly. No, I was kind of thinking more like in Data and Generations. Hate this, you know, like, but that's kind of how the feeling you almost get when she's sitting on the couch. But at the same time, throughout that scene, there's something that becomes familial about the relationship, so that, you know, when she gets the dress at first, she kind of opens it up and looks at it, and then there's the realization of what the heck is going, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's really interesting, because at the same time, what becomes so sad about losing Zial is that she is the link between the two races, of showing that they really don't think that different.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's the beauty of her character.
She's the embodiment of the rebirth, trying to move forward to the future between Bajor and Cardassia.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And of course, when she's killed, it shows how difficult it is to move on from something like that. And we see that in our own world, of course, where societies, governments are enemies, and then they're allies, and then they're enemies again, because you just can't move forward in that. And in this storyline, Zial is the very embodiment of that. And in terms of Dukat and Zial, what do you see in how he's approaching her and why he's warming up to her? Is that also a ploy to try to get to Kira? Or do you feel there is genuine love on his part towards his daughter?
You know, we've talked about this so much. I
think about it in this episode specifically, in the actions that he takes towards her in this episode.
Possibly. And I say that because I feel like Dukat brought her to the station to help him out with the situation that he's been having with Kira and the frustration of them working together. And he's trying to find a way to win her over, not just get her into bed. He's trying to find, any of that kind of stuff. He's trying to find a way to make the situation easier for them working together. And he's using Zial to do it. And there's such an underlying motive, I do believe, here, that it's hard to see anything else a lot of the time. I do think when he says, though, that he is proud of her and the drawings, you know, I think there is a part of him that sees all that, and it's not fake.
Yeah, it feels genuine.
So so it's just so muddy. It's never clear with him.
Well, and then if you race forward to the end of this arc, when she's killed and he has his breakdown, which we've also talked about on some recent shows, that does support for me a bit that aspects of this are genuine, what we see in this episode as well, that he does care for her. But as we talked about before, he may feel that way towards her because she reinforces to him that he's not as bad as people say that he is.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it does give the nuance that people are so excited about with him. But at the same time, the muddiness of it all, I think, also supports in the end where Dukat's character ends up. You know, it's never, for me, it was never a question of whether he was going to be the ultimate bad guy. It was just, how was he going to get there? And, you know, her dying and all that, it just brings about the opportunity to finally let go of Mr. Nice Guy and just be the villain, you know, finally, because he doesn't have anybody else to try and fool anymore. So yeah, it's a great, this episode for me is such a great reminder of the fantasticness of the writing of Deep Space Nine to make storylines that I didn't really think might work, the Alexander storyline, or to dive into something like Kira and Dukat and Zial and Martok and all these characters. I mean, think about this. Martok and Dukat and Zial and Alexander, they are not main characters on the show. They are side characters, but we have an entire episode driven by them, and it's bloody brilliant. I mean, I really like this episode, and it's a great episode because even if you haven't been following the arc, it is something that you can go back and watch because it's so character driven.
Yeah, it's true. You don't need to know the background of Worf and Alexander or Martok or Zial or how she ended up on Bajor in the first place. You don't need to know any of that to take away the message of this episode.
Yeah, so it's a really good episode, and I'm glad that I love doing these arcs because it's one of the strengths of Deep Space Nine anyway, and so it's so much fun to see the interconnectedness of the shows when we talk about it like this, I love that the listeners love it, Chris, because it just gives us a great excuse to go back and watch some of the greatest things in Deep Space Nine's history.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I think we've covered that pretty well. Again, we've recently talked extensively about Zial and Dukat, so we spend a little less time on that today as we spent on Worf and Alexander and Martok. If you want to hear more about Zial and Dukat, you can go back a couple of shows. We did one show entirely about Zial, and then I guess, Matthew, maybe in some of the Orbs of Mail recently, we've talked about
Dukat
and his relationship with Zial. So you can find some stuff there also. So that's it for this installment of our look at the season 6 opening arc. Next time we come to this, which will be 3 or 4 shows down the road, we'll be doing Behind the Lines, which I also just watched yesterday and reminded myself about a lot of interesting things in there, Matthew. So I'm looking forward to when we can talk about that.
I'm with you, Chris. This has been such a fun series to do, and I'm with you. I'm kind of like interested to get, what's the next episode? Because, you know, I've seen these episodes so many times, but there are things that all kind of get glommed together, and you just kind of forget which episodes they come in. And actually, Behind the Lines is one of those. We were talking on the other side of the orb, and you were reminding me some of the plot points, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And I'm kind of like, I wish I didn't have to do another podcast tonight so I could just go watch that episode of Deep Space Nine.
It gets kind of muddy, right? Because of the way DS9, the episodes run together. Remembering which episode is the moment when a certain thing happens. You remember the event, but you don't necessarily always remember exactly which episode it's in.
Exactly.
I was talking to Larry the other day about how DS9 is littered with TOS references. And Behind the Lines opens with one where they're drinking Saurian brandy.
Yep, there you go. Love it.
That's
pretty
awesome.
In fact, I think that Deep Space Nine might be the only show before Enterprise that we really even hear anything about Andorians, because they frequently will mention an Andorian
There's the episode of TNG where Law is trying to figure out what she wants to look like, and they do this weird looking Andorian on the holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a holographic projection, and that's, kind of it in the recent series. All right. Well, it's been great talking about this, but it's not the only thing we've been discussing here on the network recently. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So I just stopped, watched it, and just cried like a child. It was such an emotional impact. I was wrecked.
Earl Grey.
You know, what the clubs and the meetings and the podcasts, you know, all really comes down to is just finding and talking and being around other people who enjoy something that you really enjoy.
The Orb.
This year, opening for 5-year mission is Del Rock.
Del Rock.
Del Rock. They'll rock your world, Bajoran style.
The Ready Room.
I do like that he just drops out of the sky naked. That is a perfect way to introduce Q. And then just before we cut to the credits, they get this great shot of him looking up at Picard, and he's like, hey, what up?
To the journey!
My question is, what would Janeway have in place of banana pancakes? Because that's B'Elanna's thing. Would Janeway's be coffee ice cream?
I was just about to say coffee ice cream. My lips were forming the syllables to say coffee ice cream.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. And I remember revisiting it now in full. And I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I know that both of us will come out of it okay, but since Matthew is not used to sparring with either of us, I'm afraid that he's going to be a bloody mess lying on the floor of the 602 Club.
The 602 Club.
They're playing God with fossilized mosquitoes as if, you know, they have the right to do this, like they have the knowledge to do this, you know, that they can control any kind of species that they have absolutely no knowledge of.
Literary Treks.
Yeah, this happened to her at 22 when she was on Ryan's Hope, and it was at its peak. It had a big following, and it was not your typical run-of-the-mill soap opera either. I mean, Claire Levine, the writer of the show, was doing some very different things.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I tried different action figures. I tried Black Widow. I tried the Black Widow from the Hot Toys Black Widow. Too small. It wouldn't work with
really?
The other action. Yeah, it didn't photograph quite.
But tell everyone why you're photographing action figures.
And introducing the newest addition to the network, Women at Warp.
Also, you think Kirk would be happier about kissing himself.
Right?
It was his lifelong ambition.
Yeah. I don't know. I more feel like it's his lifelong ambition to kiss Spock, but maybe that's just me.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have new shows for you every single day here on the network, and you can find them everywhere you get your podcasts. We're in iTunes, we're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, SoundCloud. You can go to the website, you can stream from the show page, download the MP3 file, grab the RSS link. We try to get the shows to you every possible way. And just grab them however you like. If you're in iTunes, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. That really helps us rise up in the search results. It helps other DS9 fans find the orb. And plus, we love to hear what you think about the show. So we hope that we will hear from you there. Now, if you want to share your thoughts on today's show, there are many ways that you can do that. But I think the very best way is to come and join us in the Babel Conference on Facebook. Matthew, tell everyone what that's all about.
Well, the Babel Conference is the listeners-only discussion group that we have on Facebook, so that the only people who can join the group are really the ones who listen to our shows, because that's the only place we really talk about it. And it makes for, I think, just a fantastic place to have some great discussions. We were actually having one today about a Deep Space Nine episode. So if you enjoy good Star Trek talk, if you enjoy the things that we talk about on the 602 Club, we're talking about a billion different things at one time. And it's got to be one of the most respectful and amazing places to have a discussion online. And I hope that you'll join us there. So just go to the Babel Conference there on Facebook. Just type that in the search field, Babel. Or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar, and that'll bring you right to the group. Just ask to join. Any one of our admins will let you into the group, and you can join into the discussion anytime.
Yeah. And that discussion that you're mentioning there, Matthew, about DS9 that we had today, I think is a great example of how in the Babel Conference, we really can have discussions about heated issues without it turning into a flame war, which often happens on the internet and on Facebook. I mean, we were talking about In the Hands of the Prophets, and we were talking about religion and science, and some of us are on one side of the fence and some of us are on the other, but yet we had that play out. No one screamed at anybody. And I think it's really a tribute to what Star Trek's all about and what IDIC is all about. Mm. So do come join us over there. Babel is B-A-B-E-L. So just type that into the search field in Facebook and you'll get right on over there. Now, another thing you can do for us, if you want to participate in the network, help us keep the shows coming, and even join into our new Patrons Roundtable discussions, which involve hosts and listeners together, is to support us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll see different contribution levels and perks, and you can set any amount that you like, and you can actually change that from month to month as well. So if you decide to do $10 this month, you're not locked into that. You can change that to $5 or $1. You can go up if you want to go to $25 and participate in the Patrons Roundtable. It's a very flexible system, and every dollar makes a big difference for us in being able to get these shows out to you. And we hope that you will come and support us over there. And you can even become an associate producer here on the network as well. And we would like to thank our associate producers of The Orb. There's Ruth Ward, Will Wynn, and Ken Tripp, all great supporters of Trek FM, the network, and big fans of The Orb. And Ruth is very involved in our discussions on the Babel Conference. So come over there and talk Deep Space Nine with her there. And we thank them so much for their support of the network and hope you'll join us as well. Again, patreon.com/trekfm. Now, Matthew, what if people want to get in touch with you personally? Where should they go?
Well, Chris, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on Literary Treks with Dan. And you know what, Chris? We were talking about this the other day, Dan and I, that on Trek FM, it's really the only place where you can kind of get new Star Trek, because yeah, we talk about the new comics and the new books. We interview the authors. We even talk about the old books, which still feel new if you've never read them. And so it's a great place to get Star Trek that we're just not getting. I mean, we get the JJ films, and so far that's it. So if you want new Star Trek, come and join us over there on Literary Treks, because we have a blast discussing this together and with the authors. And it's been a great show to be doing for the last couple of years. and then do the 602 Club, where we talk about just so many different things geeky with all the new movies coming out this year. That it is the golden age to be a geek with all that we've got on TV, all the films coming out, all the back catalog that we have to talk about. So that's so much fun. And then I have my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com, where I just do reviews of movies and books and talk about things that are important to me. So you can join me over there as well. Now, Chris, when you're not sending dresses to Kira for that hopeful date, where can we find you?
It's going to work eventually, Matthew. I also keep sending them to Leffler. Unfortunately, she's too far away. So
that's the problem. You sent them to Leffler and to Kira, and they talked.
Oh, they talked. Because they're both taking the William Riker chair sitting course over subspace. They were in the same class.
They knew what was going on.
Yeah, that's too bad. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And you can find me on Facebook with the same username. And also, I'm in the Babel Conference, so I'd love to talk Star Trek with you over there. Elsewhere on the network, you can find me doing The Ready Room, where we talk about all five live-action Star Trek series, as well as Star Trek news. The current episode that is out, Larry Nemechek and I had a great time sitting down with Adam Nimoy, Leonard Nimoy's son, to talk about his documentary that he's working on. We also talked a lot about Adam growing up with Spock as his dad and Adam's career. So check that out as well. Again, that's The Ready Room. You can also get that in the master feed, where you can also get Matthew's 602 Club, Literary Treks, and you can get the Patrons Roundtable, which I mentioned earlier. So the master feed is a great way to check out all of these different shows. So that's where you can find me. I also do Hyper Channel from time to time, which is Star Trek news. And then I have my new gig as a columnist on StarTrek.com. My first piece just dropped today.
Woohoo!
My new column there is called Trekspectives. And it's, I guess, kind of similar to, well, similar to these shows, similar to The Orb, but maybe more similar to The Ready Room, in that I will talk about all the different Star Trek series. Although, Matthew, in my first piece, I did drop a few DS9 references in there specifically.
So what we need you to do is we need you listeners to just count those up and send them to us. We'll see who gets the most right.
Okay, we'll see how that goes. All right, so you can find that piece over there on StarTrek.com, the official Star Trek website. And I hope you enjoy it, and let me know what you think about it. And then also I have my own website, cbrianjones.com, where I write about things other than Star Trek, if you want to check that out. Okay, Matthew, well, it was great. I'm glad we recorded another Orb without too much time passing. I know for the prophets, they don't care when we release these shows, because for them, time has no meaning. But for our listeners, they want more Orbs more frequently, and that's what we're trying to do.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.